Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal, to help you score more fantasy points.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode, a monumental episode, here on the Fantasy Points Podcast Network. I am Grant Barfield, a co-owner here at the site, and I am joined by the other bar, the second half of the bar. And I know how he'll feel about this, but he's definitely, he'll probably view himself as the most important of the two bars. It's Scott Barrett. This has been a long time coming, my friend. I feel like we've been preparing for this. We've been grinding for this. I think we're both excited for to get the show on the road here.
That's it. That's all you got, really. This is like you said, monumental. But you did this such a disservice, such a lackluster introduction for the historic monumental event that is the first ever Two Bars podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to history. Put this podcast in the Louvre. It's like being there for the signing of the Declaration of Independence, or better yet, it's like being at Foxborough for Tom Brady's first ever start, assuming that was at home. I really don't know. And you're listening to it, so that means you're one of our day one supporters. We will love you over any of our other followers times a million because you were there from day one. I feel like, Graham, we need a hashtag to commemorate this special occasion where you tweet out something like hashtag doorknobs or hashtag swamp rats. And then it's like, oh, like an insider. Oh, we know, you know, don't tell anyone else, but like you get special treatment on start sit questions, things like that. Cause you're one of our hashtag swamp rats. There for the first ever podcast, loyal listener. And beyond all that, Graham, might I add, it is my birthday. Happy birthday to me. You want to know what it takes to be the best? There's a commonality between, you know, Bill Belichick. I don't think anyone here is going to disagree that Bill Belichick is the greatest head coach of all time. I don't think anyone here is going to disagree that Scott Barrett is the greatest fantasy expert of all time. What's the common thread? Hashtag no days off, here podcasting on my birthday. First ever No Bars podcast, 7:30, 2020. What is up?
Dude, this is like the best birthday gift you could possibly get, right? Like you and I are supposed to be hanging in Texas, doing some fun shit, but the Rona had other plans. So this is the best we could do. And by the way, Tom Brady's first start was with, didn't he get the first start because Drew Bledsoe got hurt? I mean, isn't that how that worked?
I thought it was, didn't Bledsoe get hurt in week one?
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. I can't even remember. I was too young for it anyway. But I have another question. What is a swamp rat? What exactly is a swamp rat? And is that? I feel like we should have discussed the hashtag more if that's what we're going with.
I mean, the first one I threw out was hashtag doorknob, which I think we can agree sucks.
I mean, is the only reason you said doorknob because you're literally by a doorknob right now?
I think I was just looking at my doorknob, yeah. And then there's a swamp rat rifling through my trash.
Well, you did a much better job with the intro than me. You came in freaking guns blazing. I love the energy. I think it just shows the passion that you and I have brought, that we're going to bring to the show. I think it also...
And this is a long time coming. We've been talking about doing a podcast for years.
literally years. I'm also like running on like no sleep right now. And you were always, yeah, you always bring the energy. I'll come in hot for this episode too. But no, this has seriously been a long time coming. I think you and I have talked about doing a podcast or doing like Twitch streams or doing like some other free stuff for a long time. So this has seriously been a big kind of a, I don't know. I've been trying to get you on the horn for a while. You've been baiting me and you've been putting me off for the past couple weeks. But now you've been busy. You've had some stuff going on. You recorded two great shows with Adam Harstad. The second one is going to come out about running backs don't matter. But we're not going to talk about running backs and how they don't matter today. We're going to talk about some dynasty strategy. But before we do that, Scott, I kind of want to go over, you know, what we both view. First of all, like the purpose of this show and what we're kind of going after. But also, also want to hype up what we're going to be doing in season. So we're kind of approaching this as like an off-season venture. We'll hop in maybe a few times during the year. But you can mainly listen to Scott and I in season. We're going to be doing a Thursday or Friday live stream breaking down the DFS slate with our guy, John Proctor, who you were, I mean, obviously you guys were doing a, you know, legendary show back in the day. And I was in that Discord channel, by the way, just tailing all of Johnny's picks in preseason. I never really got into it, but I was just in there for the picks and the money. And it was great. I don't know. What are we going to call it? It can't be the happy hour. It can't be the power hour again. We need to come up with a better name. And I don't know if I trust you on the name after hearing your first thought of a hashtag for this show. So we got to come up with a cool name for that show too.
All right. We'll work on it. Maybe we'll throw it out to the Swamp Rats, see what the Swamp Rats say. But this, you're listening to the Two Bars podcast, and I'm on my second beer. So it's the Two Bars, Two Beers podcast. And I got to say, two beers, Scott Barrett, is like peak Scott Barrett. You don't want three beers, Scott, gets a little crazy, but two beers, Scott, right now. We got our name, we got our nickname, we got our nickname for the Swamp Rats.
I mean, we'll eventually
worry about DFS later.
I will promise you, we'll get like six or seven beer, Scott, at some point, and that is like a true trip. It'll be like week eight, and we'll be grinding on no sleep, and it'll be fantastic. Right. But no, seriously, this is I think this show is going to be a lot of fun. I think we're going to kind of keep it more like evergreen style content. Today we're going to be talking about dynasty strategy and kind of like how we build teams, because you know you and I have been now, geez, man, like how many startups have we done together at this point? I feel like it's been at least three or four.
Yeah, I mean we're in the middle of one right now, and we probably did like three or four this year, and we've definitely done more other years.
Yeah, I feel like this is a good topic because this year, for obvious reasons, has been just total shit. I think it's going to be a really hard year for fantasy for a lot of reasons, just because we won't know what's going to happen. I mean, you and I are on the very, very like fortunate receiving end of the whole Clyde Edwards-Helaire situation with Damian Williams opting out, but there's going to be more opt outs. We're going to get burnt more often, but I think this is a really interesting year for dynasty from a lot of different reasons, right? Like, you know, not only do we have the uncertainty of this season, we've got like, I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen, how many games are going to be played, but, you know, we also don't know what's going to happen with the college season, what's going to happen with, you know, how a lot of the top prospects, how they're going to treat basically, I mean, we have to go into this year thinking they're not going to play ball, college ball. So I think it's going to be a really interesting kind of couple year window for dynasty strategy. And I think this is kind of a timely show to talk about just our like overall philosophy. And I'll start with you, kick it over to you. Like what, you know, when you're going into a new team or a new startup or whatever it is, like what are the one or two things that you're always trying to do in like approaching your team building process?
So just real quick before I do that, I do want to just give some love to Dynasty. Like if we put this out as like a Dynasty strategy podcast, we're going to lose a bunch of listeners just because, you know, there's a lot of people who don't play Dynasty. It's still sort of niche, but I have to say I have so much fun playing Dynasty. It's absolutely probably my favorite format. And my preferred format within Dynasty is tight end premium super flex with a really deep bench. two start minimum, two running backs, two wide receivers, one tight end, one quarterback, then a super flex, then like four or five more flex spots. It's just the best. And then also having a rookie draft before the NFL draft to mix things up. And it's just absolutely so much fun. And, you know, it's this league that lasts forever. And you also have drafts every year, rookie drafts. And I feel like there's just so much more strategy that goes into Dynasty than there is typical redraft. But yeah, what do I do in a startup? So yeah, folks at home, if you never played Dynasty, definitely consider playing Dynasty. This is also a great time for it. My strategy has changed quite a bit. So early on, I was very, okay, I want to win at least once in the first 3 years. I'll have a very competitive team right off the bat. I'm fine selling a future first for immediate producers. And I was successful with that. You know, you win the first year, you basically paid for your buy-in for like 8+ years. So like definitely, you know, make some sense going that route. But, you know, after partnering with TJ Calkins, who's on my partner on at least half of my dynasty teams, it's just like such a mess with all my in-season demands to really pay attention to all my leagues. So I took him on as a partner, and he's just the greatest dynasty player I've ever come across. Really changed my strategy. So there's really nothing worse than like, even if you win the first 3 years and then you have one of those teams that just steady decline where, you know, guys retire, they're just like hitting the age cliff hard and your team just keeps depreciating in value. And it seems like there's nothing you can do to withstand that. It's just like the worst. It's just the worst feeling. And it is really hard to claw your way back. It's going to take a number of years. So I've since shifted my strategy, influenced a little bit by Warren Buffett, for where I'm trying to build a team that, okay, I'm not going to come close to, I'm not going to sniff the playoffs in year one. And I'm totally fine with that. I'm competing in year three. And then I think year four, I'm going to have a team that is dominant for a number of years where it's far and away the best team for year after year after year. Warren Buffett, when he invests, he looks 10 years down the road. He's like, all right, there's a lot of competition on Wall Street to win this quarter, to win this year. People are too short-term oriented. They're looking at just, you know, a quarter out, a year out, 2 years out. He's like, there's very little competition 10 years out. I want companies that are going to still be around 10 years out. And that's sort of how I look at Dynasty, where yeah, I'm fine punting year one, but then, you know, and like, who am I competing against? Look at DFB, right? You went win now. Curtis went win now. Matthew Berry, Evan Silva, win now. Pat Thorman, win now. A few other guys were sort of in between. And it was only me and Rich going win later. And, you know, we have the sexiest young core of assets and a bunch of picks next year where I feel like there's no way, you know, we don't make the playoffs next year. But, you know, our first year, we locked up the 101. This year, we're going to be, you know, have a really good shot at like a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields and, you know, are a really good young team that should be dominant for a long time.
Yeah. I think you brought up a lot of good points. And honestly, playing against you and TJ, I've learned a lot. I'll get into my strategy in a bit, but I definitely agree with you that like Dynasty should really be way more popular. I'm not really sure why it's not. I get it from like a time perspective that a lot of people just don't have the time for it, or maybe they're scared by it, but it really isn't. I don't know. I feel like if you're only playing in one league, it's really not that big of a time commitment. And I mean, we're all degenerates. I'll be the first to admit I'm a massive degenerate. And like, I think Dynasty has just made me think of fantasy differently. But yeah, I definitely think you're right too about how to build, like, you know, how these leagues should be set up with Superflex and tight end premium, kind of doing niche scoring to make it a little bit different.
Just what you were saying on like, how much of a time demand it is. Like, you're right. It's so much more low maintenance than season long where, you know, who's available on waivers and such like a deep roster, dynasty league. And there's not a ton. And like when it is in demand is like the best time, which is the startup draft. Like, nothing is more fun than a dynasty startup. And then the rookie draft. And then the rest of the time, it's sort of like at your leisure. Are you bored on the computer? Why not like shoot out some trade proposals in May? you know, when you have nothing else to do. So, it's another perk of Dynasty.
Yeah, another perk too is like if you play with big rosters, right? You play with like, let's say 25 plus roster spots, you know, like you said, the waiver wire is going to be barren, but you're also going to know like each week, like what your player pool is. Like in season long, you typically have a very shallow bench and you kind of are constantly, you should be at least in season long, you should be rotating that those end of bench spots out. But my dynasty strategies definitely changed too over time. Like I used to be just like you, really. When now I would, you know, I guess right now a good example would be like, I would be all over Julio Jones just because I felt like I was locking in 2 years of, you know, elite wide receiver production. But like you, I've kind of blended. I don't think I'm as nearly as like long-term oriented as you, yeah. You and TJ are. I think I'm a lot more flexible with the way I build teams. I'm not going into it with like, okay, I've got to build this team, you know, for the future, 5 years from now, 6 years from now. But I am always trying to think at least 2 to 3 years ahead. And in that DFB league, I did go for it. You know, I traded a bunch of assets, basically all of my startup picks 2 years from now for Tyler Lockett, who's a guy I'm really high on. But, it made sense at the time, not only because I view rookie picks as like really freaking hard to hit on. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later on maybe. But like rookie picks, I think are like one of the most misunderstood thing in Dynasty. Like your hit rate, even in the first round, like if you have a top eight pick, it's like no better than 50%. Like you can have TJ, like you said, TJ is like the best, I think maybe one of the best Dynasty players, only because he has such a good understanding of rookie value. He's just fantastic at it. And I mean, really nobody else is better at that. But, you know, even TJ, probably the best rookie evaluator I've ever played against, probably only has a hit rate in the first round of 55-60%. And after the first 8 to 10 picks, the hit rates go even lower. I mean, it's like 33% for, you know, top 15 pick. And then, you know, you go past the top 15, it's basically, you know, you're looking at, you know, 25 to 20% hit rate at best. So I've always viewed rookie picks a little bit differently. I think I just view it from like an odd standpoint. And what I typically try to do is, especially in these super flex leagues like you and I play in, there ends up being a lot of running back and wide receiver value because the quarterbacks go earlier in the draft, early in the rookie draft. So I am usually trying to sell the first round picks because I think people are overconfident on how good of drafters they are. Like you can be the best drafter in the world and still make mistakes, and that happens. But I'm usually trying to take way more shots in the second and third round, just kind of take a shotgun approach to rookie drafts. I think we covered the bases there, but we do need to talk about, like, you know, you talk about building around young cores. You know, right now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been like the talk of like the entire fantasy industry. I mean, it's almost become like everybody's had a Clyde Edwards-Helaire tweet over the last couple of days about how high they are on him, how low they were on him. And it's kind of gotten to a point where I think the hype is just going to get ridiculous on him. But like you say, you want to build around a young core. Is it typically around running backs? Is it around wide receivers? Like how do you approach that perspective? Because I think, you know, in most dynasty leagues that you play in, or if you're thinking about starting a dynasty league after you listen to this podcast with your buddies, like, you definitely should. But, I think getting into a little bit of a talk about like what right now, I mean, we're in such an interesting spot with running backs because there's so many good young ones, like, and there's so many great wide receivers, like it's never been deeper. I guess, how do you approach, you know, the young depth at running back right now and just the overall depth at wide receiver? And where do you typically find your teams with the most assets?
So I'm actually going to be covering this in part two of my podcast with Adam Harstad, talking this time about positional value in fantasy football. Last time it was about the NFL. And we're going to talk about why running back is the most valuable position in fantasy football. Far and away, that's true. But in Dynasty, I go like very near zero RB. Like I think that's such a suboptimal strategy in your typical standard ESPN league. And I talked about that on my article, Anatomy of a League Winner. But in Dynasty, I just like absolutely fade running back. All right. Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, that's totally a different story. But after maybe the top, like, honestly, 8 or 9 running backs, and that's it, I just full-on punt the position. I mean, of course, like, a young running back like a J.K. Dobbins, a Cam Akers, you know, like, I love those guys too. But really, outside of the very, very young running backs or the few elite bell cows you know are going to be around for a while, I just full-on fade that position. And it goes back to what Sean Siegel said in his Zero RB piece, which, again, the strategy I think is way better for Dynasty, is that it's the most valuable position in fantasy football, but it's also the most fragile position. You know, the age cliff for running backs happens way sooner than for wide receivers and tight ends. You know, the injury rate is high, and it could just be one of those catastrophic injuries they never come back from. Beyond that, there's also just so much competition. You know, even if a guy is a bell cow, they could be demoted to a committee type situation. Like, you know, a lot of people are drafting Devin Singletary as though he were a bell cow, and then he drafted Zach Moss, and his value skyrockets. So it's so fragile because these guys have to stay healthy. They have to withstand free agency. Then they have to withstand the draft. And remember, I'm drafting like really two years out, 3 years out. I'm like almost never trying to compete in year one, unless, of course, you know, all my competition is going win later, and then that's where the value is. But really, 3 years out. So, like, you know, what is, like, Le'Veon Bell's probably going to be retired by then. You know, Chris Connor's probably not going to be a starter by then. James Connor. So, you know, obviously, demote, devalue the running back position and load up on wide receivers in tight end premium, play a ton of tight end premium. Love me some tight ends. I go quantity and quality there. Same for wide receivers and super flex too. Quarterback is right up there in value with running back, just in terms of positional scarcity. Right. And then in terms of longevity, way more valuable. I usually go, so in Dynasty, I almost always trade down. We should spend like 5 minutes talking about that too.
Yep.
But I will always trade up for a Patrick Mahomes or a Lamar Jackson. But other than that, I'm almost always trading down.
Yeah, I view, and this is why I think, I mean, for what it's worth, anybody listening right now, like, Scott and I have really never actually sat down and talked Dynasty strategy. And I think this is seriously the first time we've like had a nuanced discussion about it. Because he and I, first of all, I'm always trying to beat Scott in any league I'm playing against him in, because, I mean, obviously.
By the way, the winner of the first ever DFB league, ladies and gentlemen,
was your boy,
Barfield.
Your boy.
Beat out Matthew Berry with a very win now team in dramatic fashion, might I add.
Yeah, it was the Aaron Jones long score. He ran up against the sideline. I had Aaron Jones and Devontae Adams in the Monday night game. I don't think Matthew had anybody left. And then I was literally on a flight watching the Packers game. Coming back from, I don't even remember where, but so on a flight coming back, watching the game on my phone, and Aaron Jones scored that touchdown. I think I was the only person on the flight making noise and just going crazy in my seat. But I approach Dynasty the same way that you do. And it's the complete opposite way that I approach best ball. It's the complete opposite way I approach season long leagues. I never go zero RB. I shouldn't say I never go zero RB. I only go zero RB when the board forces me to go zero RB in season long and in best ball leagues. With Dynasty, I'm 100% lockstep with you. I am always trying to build around young wide receivers, and especially in leagues where you have to start three wide receivers and multiple flex spots. I mean, it's just so much easier to have like 9 great wide receivers that you feel good about, as opposed to like even 5 great running backs you feel great about. I'm typically trying to build around younger wide receivers as opposed to older wideouts. I think right now there's such a youth movement at the wide receiver position. It's kind of forced down really great wide receivers that are like in their mid to late 20s that still have like 3 to 4 years of production. And I've kind of found myself skewing back towards being a little more balanced as a player when it pertains to that. But yeah, I'm 100% lockstep with you with zero RB outside of honestly, I don't even go as far to say Zeke. Like, I think Zeke could hit an edge curve here in the next couple of years. Like, really, for me, it's like four or five guys at the top that are like the 100% like must have RB1s. And then it's like a whole long second tier of, you know, a blend of guys, Aaron Jones, J.K. Dobbins, like that whole mid, you know, RB6 to like RB20 ish. You can sprinkle in even like guys like Derrick Henry at the high end or Cam Akers at the low end of that tier. I kind of all value them similarly just because of like what you said. Not only is our running backs more fragile because their workload can be so quickly impacted. I mean, I know the Bucs just signed LeSean McCoy, but he might legitimately get on the field for them this year and impact that backfield even more. I mean, there's just so much randomness at the position and so much randomness long term. So you couple that with, you know, just general turnover at the position, general talent turnover at the position. I mean, my God, how quickly did Todd Gurley go from being a top five dynasty asset to literally out? I don't even have him in my top 80, top 100, top 120. Like he is never on my board in dynasty. And it's just simply because talent can erode so quickly. And the final point really, and this kind of speaks to Todd Gurley on why I don't really build around running backs. I guess I have a second point to that, but the third point I wanted to mention too is just, I mean, the position does lend itself to more injuries. I mean, there's been numerous studies that have shown this. I found this in some of the data I've shown. I mean, like running backs are just way more susceptible to injuries. They're way more susceptible to injuries that can cause, you know, long absences. And the final point I wanted to say is like, right now, I think the common theme in Dynasty is to build around running backs. And I like betting. I like doing the opposite of that. I like doing the opposite of the common consensus pretty much in everything in everyday life. And I think it makes a lot of sense in Dynasty too, when we can build around a bunch of wide receivers. You said you wanted to bring up another subject and now it's slipping my mind because I'm running on like 2 hours of sleep. What was the other thing you want to bring up?
Yeah, it was trading down, but
I just
want to piggyback on to what you said. Yeah, maybe this is a hot take. And I promise this isn't just, you know, riding high on the news that came to us yesterday, but I would take Clyde Edwards-Helaire over any wide receiver in Dynasty. But you want to talk about, you know, like Jerry Jeudy, I would take over so many running backs currently going ahead of him, again, because it talks to the fragility. But again, a true elite bell cow running back who's going to be around for 10 years, let's say, is going to be more valuable than like a true elite wide receiver who might be around even 15 years. It's just because of positional scarcity that is so important. But I think a really good example is this bourgeoisie league draft that you're in, Graham, where of like a typical draft for me and TJ, we took Michael Thomas and then we traded him for 3 firsts. We took Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mark Andrews, it's tight end premium, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, Deontay Johnson, Michael Pittman. And so we took our first running back in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Then we didn't draft another one until round 10. And then we didn't draft another one until round 18. So it's like we're just full on punting RB2, and we expect to acquire that position in the rookie draft, hopefully next year. You know, with an early pick, because again, we're taking basically a zero at the RB2 spot. But yeah, trading down, it goes back to what you said on rookie hit rates, where, you know, you would rather have more darts to throw than like a really big dart or whatever. I totally think that's true. And I think that's also true in the startup draft. There's just, so what do we do? We're at the, you know, 108 spot, right? We'll trade that down to the 111 and acquire a future round one pick or future second and third, and then like a pick swap. So we'll move up somewhere and then we'll just keep trading down and acquiring future rookie capital or more startup picks or earlier startup picks later. And that just works out so well for us. It's again, the same theory. It's more darts to throw. It's just like a proven strategy. Like, honestly, that might be if I could tell someone doing their startup draft tomorrow, what's the one piece of advice? It's trade down.
Yeah, I that's what I was going to say too. I mean, if you do a startup draft, just listen to the show or, you know, whatever, you find more time to do it. Absolutely. That's where all the value is. And especially that's where all the value is if you don't have a top three or four pick and you can't lock in one of those running backs, or if you play in a super flex league, you can't lock in Mahomes or Lamar. The Bourgeoisie League that we are in, we did it for, you set it up, you did it for charity, a really cool kind of charity type league where you set up basically you send out a tweet, anybody that can come in and compete, the biggest, whoever pays up the most amount to give to the Brothers of Patterson, which is a really cool foundation in New Jersey, up where you used to be, your old stomping grounds, or where you used to be at. But and that Bourgeoisie League, I did the same thing. I traded back a bunch and ended up with just a ton of capital in the fourth to sixth round. And that's where the core of my team came from. I think it just makes a lot of sense. And that's typically how I want to build in general. It's like I go into a lot of fantasy team builds, and I go into a lot of when I'm writing an article or setting up something, I just try to strip it down to the bare bones and be like, okay, I don't know anything. How do I capitalize on the randomness? And if I don't know anything, I'm trying to solve this problem or whatever. What's the easiest way for me to get value? And the easiest way to get value in Dynasty is just to trade down, like you said. All right, Scott, we're going to talk about some players to buy and sell in Dynasty. I mean, you can't talk Dynasty without, talking about players you're high on to players we're low on. I promise you, Scott will have a whole section on Clyde Edwards-Helaire and his love for him and Hollywood Brown, all the guys. But first, we need to get a message from our sponsors.
Hey, Fantasy Points listeners. Ben Kukanis here, Director of Operations for FantasyPoints.com. Coming at you to deliver a couple words from our sponsors. First up, have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. So that means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. And if you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use our promo code FPP. Or deal-.fm/FPP, all capital letters. That's DEALDASH.FM/FPP. I'm not only excited for DealDash, I'm also excited for Bet Online. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE, BLUEWIRE. Bet Online, your online wagering experts. Let's get back to the show.
All right, Scott, we're back. Let's talk about some players that were high and low on in Dynasty. I'll get it started, and I think you mentioned him earlier in the show, and this kind of speaks to our broader point about not necessarily zero RB, but just building for the future and kind of making, building your team for upside later. I think the most mispriced running back out there right now in Dynasty, in your keeper league, is J.K. Dobbins. Let's not think about that he landed with Baltimore for a second, right? You just strip down him as a prospect and look at just the bare bones. The guy is a prolific producer at Ohio State. At 18 years old, he averaged over 7 yards per carry. Breakout age is one of those things that has kind of become a touchstone, I think, in the Dynasty community and in fantasy community in general for predicting how well rookies are going to play. But J.K. Dobbins broke out at 18 years old against, you know, high-end competition and basically bookended a stellar three-year career at Ohio State with just a monster, monster season last year. Had over 20 touchdowns, 2,200 yards from scrimmage, over 350 touches, was on the field every single play. And then I chart him for yards created, and he blows up. He's the one of only two running backs in this class that created yards at above average rate on inside and outside carries. And now he goes to the money spot with the Ravens, with Lamar, the God. I mean, any running back that is going to share a backfield with Lamar Jackson is immediately at an advantage just because of what the defense has to account for with Lamar. And J.K. Dobbins is going to shred. And Jackson's 24 career starts as running backs have averaged over 5 yards per carry. They've been like top two or top three in success rate, top two or top three in first downs, top five in fantasy points scored. And that's without basically any receiving production to speak of, because Lamar does not check the ball down. At least right now, he's not checking the ball down because he's always looking to run. J.K. Dobbins is only 21 years old, and he goes off the board as like outside of the top, I don't know, 18, 20 running backs. He goes well after Jonathan Taylor. He goes well after Clyde Edwards-Helaire for good reason. But J.K. Dobbins has a like long-term 5 or 6 year window after this season, after Mark Ingram is gone. He's 30 years old and he's going to be on the end of his deal. He has a 5 or 6 year window where he is going to be producing as an RB1. I think the Ravens are always going to be a team that are going to kind of rotate running backs, but J.K. Dobbins fits the bill of a workhorse. He was a workhorse in college. And I think he is going to get that 15 to 20 carry role every single week with Lamar Jackson after this season. And he has been somebody that I've been trying to like furiously build my teams around. And in that Bourgeoisie League for charity that we put up, J.K. Dobbins is my RB2. And I finally got a share of him. But I don't know. I just feel like Dobbins is, for whatever reason, like, you know, yes, Jonathan Taylor is a prolific prospect in his own right, and he did go to a great spot too. But I just feel like in terms of both the rushing potential on the ground and the receiving potential, they're very, very close in terms of what we're expecting their workload to eventually be. And I think you could honestly argue that Dobbins is maybe in a better long-term position simply because he's attached to Lamar Jackson and the Colts don't have their long-term quarterback just yet. So I've been trying to buy J.K. Dobbins. I know we're in a bunch of sharp leagues together, and that's a lot harder. But, man, I think building your RB core around Dobbins makes so much sense, and he's not as nearly as expensive right now as Taylor and Edwards-Helaire. Scott, who is your, like, your top buy, top two buys? Who you got?
Yeah, so I just want to, you know, fully agree with you there on Dobbins. He's where do I want running backs? I want those elite bell cows like, you know, Kamara, Barkley, McCaffrey, or I want, you know, really, really young running backs like a J.K. Dobbins, Cam Akers, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jonathan Taylor, who 21 years old, you know, they're going to dominate for the near entirety of their rookie contract. I mean, like, what's his worst season going to be in his rookie contract? Probably this year, where he's in sort of a committee with Mark Ingram. But I think next year it's his entire backfield to himself. And he absolutely dominates, like, you know, the most efficient offense in football. We're the Baltimore Ravens, and people underestimate what a hypermobile quarterback does for running back efficiency. Yes, it does hurt him somewhat in target volume, probably. But at the same time, I mean, Gus Edwards averaged 5.28 yards per carry in Lamar Jackson's 22 career starts. Mark Ingram, 5.04. J.K. Dobbins, far better than either of those running backs at this stage of their career. And Dobbins is going a full round later than a 26-year-old Kenyon Drake, a 25-year-old Leonard Fournette, 25-year-old Aaron Jones.
God. Oh my God. Could you imagine taking Leonard Fournette over J.K. Dobbins?
I know.
I mean, just imagine.
It's really laughable.
No, it genuinely is. And I think that kind of speaks to the point about why Dynasty can be so fun, and also why it's such a winnable game, because so many people do focus so closely on the short term. And like, Leonard Fournette could literally be worthless next year. Like, it would not surprise me at all if Fournette, like, I don't know, he just disappoints this year, or, you know, loses his big workload and tries to go into free agency and it just doesn't work out. I mean, it just speaks to the fungibility of running backs, but it also speaks to, you know, if a team like the Ravens or like the Colts or like the Chiefs invest heavily in a high capital running back, like just how valuable that asset can be long term. And this is something that I see all the time, like in the fantasy community, and like people spend way too much time looking backwards. Like we got to get it out of our minds that you know, the past production leads to future results. Like, yes, that's true to a certain extent, like with Michael Thomas, Devontae Adams, like elite players, absolutely. But at running back, man, like especially long term, that's not true. And I just hate seeing so many people that play fantasy say, oh, this rookie's never done it before, so I can't trust him. It's like, okay, in season long, sure, I get that to a certain extent, especially this year with everything going on. But man, like, it's just so infuriating that people use so many like, historical trends, and we just don't have enough understanding. I don't think there's enough understanding in general in the fantasy community about just how random things are and embracing that randomness, but also profiting off that randomness. But Scott, I did want to give you the floor about a couple guys that you're high on. And I do appreciate, by the way, you coming to my side on Dobbins.
Yeah. I've been doing some secret articles where I'll write an article and it's just too valuable to tweet out. So it's for Fantasy Points subscribers only. It's this one, check it out. Sophomore standouts, absolutely crushed it. Great job, Scott Barrett. In this article, I talk about how we are massively underrating the 2019 wide receiver class. And I think that's because the 2020 class got hyped up as historically great. You know, love me some Jerry Jeudy, love me some Brandon Ayuk, but the 2019 class had 11,849 receiving yards collectively, which is the second most all time, behind only the famed 2014 class. And look at Marquise Brown, Deontay Johnson, Terry McLaurin. There are 8 rookie wide receivers being drafted ahead of Marquise Brown in dynasty leagues. That is just absolutely inexcusable.
It's criminal.
I know. And AJ Brown, by the way, future stud too, but like he's at least sort of appropriately priced. But our track record, Graham, when you and I are simpatico on a prospect, like we were with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like we were on Christian McCaffrey, like we were with Kareem Hunt his rookie season, it's just like we basically, you know, that guy is going to be a smash home run hit. And I know you're fully on board with me on the greatest value of all these, which is Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, dude. Just don't mention Chris Hogan. I know he wasn't a prospect, but the Chris Hogan call. No, I'm just playing. No, when we have linked up and been like lockstep, where we'll like not put our heads together, but we'll just be like, "Yo, it's Kareem Hunt, right?" Like we've had those moments before, and I think
we're batting 1,000 minus Chris Hogan. Like that's it.
Oh, Mark, dude, you're not even counting Mark Andrews. You're not even counting George Kittle. Mm-hmm. You're not even counting those guys. I mean, I was pushing the George Kittle cart hard, but yeah, Hollywood, man, like he is going to, I seriously think he's going to be a league winner this year. And in Dynasty, you can buy him now, where he's priced as like a wide receiver 3, which is just stupid. I think Hollywood Brown is going to have a couple top 15 fantasy seasons in him. I mean, Lamar Jackson was just quoted today, saying that, and I assume Jackson and Brown have been working out together. I know they have, but he said Lamar said, quote, he's going to have a huge jump. His full potential is going to show this year. And he basically said he's a lot faster. And, Marquise Brown was playing with a screw in his foot last year. There was an article that came out from Bleacher Report that said he was playing like maybe 10, 15 pounds under his normal playing weight, just clearly was nowhere near what we saw from him at OU. And actually, Scott, I remember talking to you about Hollywood before he got drafted by the Ravens. You were like, dude, this tape is just unbelievable. And I remember flipping it on, and he's just constantly creating separation, just like exactly what people look for. You know, we look for in our receivers these days. We want them to create separation against boundary corners, be able to move in the slot, get open deep. And, you know, people are drafting and acting like Henry Ruggs, the second coming of Tyreek Hill. No, it's Hollywood Brown. Hollywood Brown is going to be the second coming of Tyreek Hill, and he's not going to get the volume that Tyreek Hill gets. He doesn't have Patrick Mahomes, but man, like in terms of splash play potential and creating separation both on the outside and in the slot, it's going to be Hollywood Brown. And Scott, I know you slipped in Terry McLaurin there. That's my guy. Like, he's another player that is not.
Just finish the final point on Hollywood, then we move to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just pulled up his redraft ADP. The guy's going immediately. He's wide receiver 28. The guy's going immediately behind him. Devontae Parker, Julian Edelman, Brandon Cooks, Jarvis Landry, Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd. Like, none of those guys excite me. Marquise Brown is going to finish as a wide receiver one this year. I do not throw out the league-winning player tag too often. I did it last year with Lamar Jackson.
Upside wins championships, baby.
There you go. He is a league winner. I want him in every single draft. Every single draft, the end. Terry McLaurin, yeah. Next. In Dynasty, McLaurin, the one thing with McLaurin is, like, he is old. Like, he is really surprisingly old for a prospect. But I mean, he's still egregiously mispriced.
Yeah, he is older for a second-year player. And also, I mean, we should also say Dwayne Haskins is, like, yikes bad.
They do have chemistry.
They do have chemistry. They did play college ball together, obviously. I don't know how much that matters, man. Like, we've just seen it. Yeah. We've seen it matter, and we've seen guys like, you know, even deep as like Patrick Mahomes and DeAndre Washington at Texas Tech. We've seen Drew Lock, and we'll see Drew Lock and Albert O. I'm sure there's a little bit of like, you know, we got to get this guy, but I just don't know how much that matters. But man, like, McLaurin last year was, I just feel like his rookie season is just being like completely, I don't know. He'll finally get some of the hype he deserves once, you know, people are a little more locked into this season. But for dynasty purposes, I mean, he's just, I just don't think he's priced properly. If you look at some like the historical context behind McLaurin's rookie season, especially considering what he had to deal with the quarterback, like, not only was Dwayne Haskins not good, but like Case Keenum isn't very good himself, but McLaurin was phenomenal last year. I'm a big believer in, especially with young wide receivers, kind of giving their production context. I'm a big fan of looking at draft capital and seeing how that player performs relative to his draft capital, because in fantasy, you know, where a player was picked in the NFL draft is like one of the best indicators of future production we have. And man, like McLaurin's production based on his draft capital was absurd. I mean, he had 919 yards. That was the fourth most for any wide receiver drafted in the third round or later ever. You had a great stat on McLaurin. It was he accounted for like 33% of the Washington's receiving yards last year. That was the best mark by any rookie wide receiver since Odell Beckham's crazy first season. And, you know, he gets open all the time. Matt Harmon does a great job with reception perception, and McLaurin was top 12 in success rate against man. I mean, he just outproduced his draft capital, even with a bad quarterback situation, which might change. I think Washington is going to be in the running for Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields in 2021. And, I mean, if he gets a great quarterback, it's going to be lights out. Even if he doesn't this year, he's going to get a ton of volume. So love me some Terry McLaurin this year.
Yeah, you know, I'm absolutely with you there. Just, you know, the dude was getting open at will. It was insanely impressive. Deontay Johnson is the third guy from that article who is maybe above McLaurin for me, but very close. Just another guy who, you know, crushed in every single separation stat there is at PFF, SIS, NGS. And he just had the worst quarterback play in the world. He was also playing through a sports hernia injury. He also led the league in missed tackles forced. despite ranking just 34th in reception. So, you know, before the catch, route running, after the catch, missed tackles forced. He was doing it all, just held back by quarterback play and maybe the sports hernia injury. Another guy who's just egregiously mispriced. So yeah, take advantage of, you know, people overhyping this rookie class, or not even overhyping, just neglecting the sophomore class and these three wide receivers. And like I said, AJ Brown's going to be a stud as well. DK Metcalf looks like a stud. Greg Cassell loves DK Metcalf, by the way, but those guys are at least a little better priced.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that because I've known Greg for a while. And obviously Metcalf is a freak, but he doesn't really fit the archetype of receiver that Cosell usually likes. So I think it bodes well for him. Real quick on Deontay. Are you not concerned that, like, I mean, first of all, Juju is still very, very good at football. Like, let's get that out there. But he was also nowhere close to 100% last year. And yeah, Deontay led all rookie wide receivers in receptions. That's super impressive. But I mean, he did it with, you know, basically no Juju. How do you view, like, the Steelers? I mean, just for this year, right? What do you think about Juju's value and, like, where he should be going? I guess not just in Dynasty, but in season long. And also, like, it sounds like you're a lot higher on Deontay than I am. Is Deontay still a value for you where he goes in season long drafts this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a value to me. Can Ben Roethlisberger sustain two top 12, top 15 fantasy wide receivers? I mean, how many years in a row has he done it when he stayed healthy? Is Juju a value? Maybe. Honestly, I mean, before his injury, he set the record for the most receiving yards by any wide receiver before hitting the age of 23 ever. And I think second was Randy Moss. Third was Larry Fitzgerald. So it was just like this obscene list of, you know, all-star talents. Odell Beckham Jr. was high on that list as well. And really, you got to give him a massive injury discount, a lot of the same discounts we gave to Deontay. But yeah, I am selling my Juju shares, and it's just because, you know, I am such a believer in Deontay, and he is going so much cheaper.
I remember that day you tweeted out that Deontay, he was going to pull a Chris Godwin on Mike Evans this year. And then the very next day, Juju Smith-Schuster comes out and starts looking like he's going to start fighting in the freaking MMA.
That's right.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think I'm still a little bit higher on Juju than you are. But man, like, yeah, the Steelers are going to throw a ton this year. The last time Big Ben was healthy in 2018, they were literally the most pass heavy team in the NFL in neutral situations when the scoreboard was within 7 points. And when they were trailing, they threw over 80% of the time. So yeah, I think the path for both Juju and Deontay to be top 15 this year, top 20 is certainly there. One player you mentioned earlier, and this kind of alludes to the whole point of the show, I guess, but two players I'm selling in Dynasty, and I only had one team with James Conner on it, but I'm selling James Conner and Devin Singletary. Conner's kind of an easy one, final year of his deal. I mean, if he goes away from Pittsburgh, like, I can't imagine him getting signed by a team, maybe outside of Atlanta, where his value would go up. And obviously his health long-term is a concern as well. Our guy, Edwin Porras on the site, he's our injury expert, has been like preaching caution for James Conner. And I mean, it makes sense. Everybody knows Conner's history. Don't need to get too much into that. But I just think the Steelers, even though it's not been a ton of capital at the position, they have spent the last three off seasons bringing in other running backs. You know, Jalen Samuel they drafted, Benny the Snail they drafted super late, and then Anthony McFarland, who I'm pretty high on. They got in the fourth round. So I don't know. I think they've just been trying to build up their running back depth a little bit. And I think we could see Connor's touches go down this year. So I traded my only team I had Connor on. I traded him this offseason. I have no Devin Singletary. But Scott, I can't really remember a situation, in recent memory, where we've had, you know, a team spend pretty decent capital on a running back in back-to-back years, third round picks, Singletary and Zach Moss, and like the whole industry is just like so confident Singletary's the guy. Like I wouldn't say I was low on Zach Moss's ability as a runner, but he's definitely not a jag. I think he popped and missed tackles forced. He was a great receiver. And the Bills spent basically the same amount of draft capital on Singletary as they did Moss. They were both like mid third round picks. Singletary went just a little earlier, but the fantasy industry and the fantasy hive mind is like convinced itself that Devin Singletary is like the superior player. And I just don't think that's the case. I think they should be a lot closer. And for that reason, if you're a Singletary dynasty owner, you should maybe try to sell him to someone that's even higher on him in your league.
Yeah, I mean, definitely with you on Singletary. Connor honestly like doesn't bother me too much. I think he's super cheap, but like definitely not a guy I expect to be, you know, around for two. I mean, like honestly, at his price, he's probably fine. In redraft, he's actually a buy for me. A player I'm sort of targeting when I miss out on the bell cows in the early rounds. As for my sells, really just those mid-tier running backs, like of the Connor archetype, I kind of like him just because he's the cheapest of those. Him and Bell tend to be the cheapest. So if you don't want to punt year one, like I typically do, I'm fine with that. But, you know, really, like I said, just so hyper fragile. It's the same thing with the mid-tier quarterbacks too. Guys I just don't think are very good quarterbacks are going to be around for too long. If I get quarterbacks, I really want the exciting, the elite quarterbacks like the Deshaun Watsons, the Russell Wilsons, the Carson Wentz, the Joe Burrows of the world. But, you know, the Drew Locks, the Teddy Bridgewaters, Justin Herberts. Yeah, big time fade for me just because you can get guys like, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers are just basically free. So if you just want to be competitive for a year, you can grab those guys. And then otherwise, it's kind of like quarterback, where in a super flex, I like running back. So in a super flex, running back and quarterback are the two most valuable positions in a landslide. But for whatever reason, these positions, there's value really to me only at the very, very top. And then you can get like a really old guy for super cheap to help you for a year or two. But really, those are the positions you're hoping to land in the rookie draft.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, I think, you know, what we're saying in general is like a lot of these running backs are overvalued relative to their long-term expectation, right? Like, I know I mentioned earlier with Fournette, he could be somebody is basically worthless, but like very, very few mid-round running backs are kind of a trap, like for a lot of different reasons. And I think there's a lot of trap running backs in season long in best ball leagues this year. They go in mid rounds. I think you are higher on Connor than I am. And I think that makes sense. But one player I think we're both out on completely is Leonard Fournette. He had like the best usage you could possibly get for a running back. He played every single snap last year, got like 70, 75 receptions, and was essentially like the most inefficient player in the NFL last year. He did get a little bit unlucky in the touchdown department, but he really didn't have a lot of opportunity. Like David Montgomery had nearly three times the amount of opportunity inside the 10, which is where we're looking at.
So scoring
chances, but Fournette is, I think Fournette is maybe the most obvious fantasy fade, like all across the board that I can remember in the last couple years.
I just wrote two articles on this where basically, like I had a great year last year, Lamar Jackson, Chris Godwin, Mark Andrews, Dalvin Cook, but like my Leonard Fournette call was right there. We just got so insanely unlucky. The two stats that correlate best to fantasy points by a landslide are snaps and weighted opportunity, which is the metric I came up with. Also snap percentage. Fournette last year ranked second in snap percentage, second in snaps per game, second in weighted opportunity points per game. He ranked fourth in red zone opportunities per game. He scored just three touchdowns. He should have scored about 10. Just brutal luck, and that is a stat. That is luck. Touchdown efficiency is all luck. It always regresses to the mean. So he would have been like the most glaring regression candidate of all time. Where, hey, I mean, and that's what it was, weighted opportunity. He had like one of the three most unlucky, inefficient seasons of all time. But I want no part of him because primarily the offensive coordinator change, which is why I was all over him last year. Now has as his offensive coordinator Jay Gruden. Before that, he had John DeFilippo, who loves a bell cow running back, loves to pepper that running back with targets in the passing game. Jay Gruden is the total opposite. He wants a committee. He wants to pepper Chris Thompson with targets in the passing game. So just absolutely not someone I'm in on. Plus, as we know from our calls with Adam Kaplan, NFL insider, the team is just so done with him. They tried to trade him. They're sick of his attitude. Other teams really no interest in him. So he's going to have a dead free agency period next year in a really good rookie running back class.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think last year, if they had literally anybody not named Reichel Armstead or like anybody, they would have probably looked another way. And I mean, now this year with Gruden and they've added, you know, not only have they added Chris Thompson, who I don't really think matters too much, but like, I think Laviska Shenault matters. If Shenault's healthy, I think he's going to get some of those like low average depth of targets, like around the line of scrimmage that would typically go to Fournette. And he's just a better, more explosive player in general. Scott, how many are you on three beer, Scott, now? Or are you up to four beer? Like, are you just stuck on the two? Are you just nursing it? Where are we at here?
I wanted to stay at peak two beer Barrett. So just two beers. Actually just poured myself some water. But that was a good call on LaVisca. I wasn't even thinking about him, but I like that call.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like he's kind of been a forgotten guy in this rookie class. I mean, he has the draft capital to back it up too. I mean, he went really early. He went earlier than Denzel Mims, like way earlier than Mims. He went in the same range as Higgins. I don't know. I'm not really super high on him for fantasy, but I do think he's going to take enough of opportunity away from Fournette to make sense. Scott, man, this was awesome. First episode. Like, how do you put a podcast in the Louvre? I wanted to mention this earlier. Like, how do you think they would do that? I've been to the Louvre, by the way. I don't see anywhere where you could like press a button to listen to an hour long podcast about Dynasty. And frankly, I don't think the French would really give a shit, but I don't know how you would do that.
Yeah. People don't know this about me. I actually lived in Paris for a year. I went to Sciences Po in Paris, a international university. And my apartment was, I would walk through the Louvre to my classes every day. Also went to the Louvre with my grandmother and my mom, and we got accosted and almost got into a fist fight with a gypsy to protect my grandmother's honor. True story. What do we do with this podcast? You take the podcast, you go to the Louvre, you grab your hammer and nails, and you staple it right next to the Mona Lisa.
I knew you lived, I knew you went to school in France. Was it just like an offshoot kind of study abroad type thing? Cause my fiance, she did the same thing for a couple months. I always wanted to do that, but I feel like Paris would be like the best spot to be in college. I'm sure you had a blast.
Oh yeah. I had such a fun time. It is Sciences Po is the number two school in the world for political science. It's something like 12 of the last 14 French presidents went there, including Sarkozy, who actually failed out. But it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. I was that douche American who refused to learn any French. So all I knew was, je voudrais un sandwich. And that one phrase somehow, I survived on that and that alone. But yeah, a lot of fun drinking €2 bottles of wine on the Seine and chain smoking Marlboro Reds. That was a good year.
Yeah, I feel like enough people don't know how cheap wine is in Europe. Like, you can go to any store and get like seriously some of the best wine you'll ever drink in your life, and it's like literally like $3 American. It's crazy. And yeah, I love that about France. But dude, this was awesome. Inaugural episode. I promise you I'll bring in the heat on the first one. But to the Swamp Rats, like, thanks for grinding with us.
Swamp Rats.
Yeah, man. It's growing on me. It's not growing on me at all. We got to do something else about this. But Scott, this was awesome, dude. What do you have coming up next? I know you're coming out with like a Bell Cow article. I've got some stuff coming up. But what do you have on the horizons that we should be looking out for?
So I'm going to do my Bell Cow report. So I've already drafted Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, another great Frenchman. Clyde Edwards-Hilaire.
Yeah, it would be an Hilaire.
Hilaire. I drafted over a week ago, like before the Damian Williams news. I've drafted him 112. I've drafted him 201. People were like, well, that's crazy. Nope. It makes sense to me. Why? Because I target running backs a very unique way. It's what led me on to, you know, Christian McCaffrey as a league winner last year, Kareem Hunt as a league winner the year before that. I'm very unique approach. It's a bell cow or bust sort of draft strategy. I'll lay that out in the article, why I target, how I target these running backs and why, what to look for, who to avoid. It's a ton of running backs to avoid. My pool for wide receivers is pretty wide, but my pool of running backs I'm drafting is very tight. So be on the lookout for that. What do you have in the books, Graham?
Yeah. Definitely looking forward to that. That piece. I have a cool game script article. I've been basically like, I've had it done for seriously months. I've just kind of been waiting for a number of reasons to let this thing fly. But I've looked back the last 2 years and like analyzed as much as I possibly can about game script, because I think it really matters, like on a weekly basis. Fantasy football is a weekly game, right? And so much can happen in any given week. But I went back and I've looked at a bunch of different like coaching trends and in different game situations, what teams do and how that affects volume, because fantasy is a weekly game and it also centers around volume, and that volume can change based not only on the matchup, right, but it can change on how the game actually goes. And then I kind of take it a couple steps further and look into some win totals and basically like extrapolate what I think is going to happen this season. But we need to, you know, let's do it. What should our second episode be about? Because I have a few ideas and I want to bring this up with you. What should we make episode 2 about? What should we be looking forward to?
Oh, man.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I know we've been talking about some ideas.
I say we shift to redraft, I guess. Maybe we go position by position strategy for quarterbacks, then we'll do another one on running backs, then another one on wide receivers, and so on.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I was also thinking about just like an intro to kind of like DFS and cash games and stuff. Okay. But maybe we should save that for later and get Johnny on. But yeah, we'll do something fun. It'll be fun. Everybody, Swamp Rats, thanks for listening. I swear to God, if we bring Swamp Rats back into episode 2, I'm going to be pissed. But for real, thank you for listening. Thanks for sticking it out, everybody. This has been a long time coming. For real. And Scott and I are both like just pumped to be doing this together and have a bunch of fun content down the line. So for Scott, I'm Graham. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.